Podcast, episode 44. I'm your host, Steve, aka Audio Cron, and here with TV Dave. G'day, TV Dave.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Yeah. We'll talk about video games on this podcast and what's been going on. And it's been, did we miss last week? I think we missed last week, didn't we?
Yeah, so we had a bit of a quiet week in there, which allowed me to clean up a few games and get back to you this week with some exciting news.
Excellent. So, you punished some backlog?
Yeah, we got I finally knocked out Wasteland 2 Director's Cut Edition. I was happy with that, getting that out of the way.
Oh, nice, nice. What are your thoughts?
So it's been out for a while, the Director's Cut Edition on top of the original release. It's hard to recommend, to be honest. And this is me speaking even after I've backed Wasteland 3 on Kickstarter.
So are you talking about the game, core game itself, or the collector's edition?
The core game itself, it kind of just throws you into things kind of willy-nilly, and the best path through all of the quests is a very long, fetchy, walky, slow affair where you can literally tell someone to move to the next map and have to go to the map screen and watch them move for 2 minutes to get to the next map.
Right. So there's no like quick 8 minute speed run mechanic a la Fallout
2. Not Fallout 2 style. No, Fallout. I mean, the Fallout games are very speed runny. They're very specific and linear to get to the exit. In terms of Wasteland, no, you definitely have to go through and knock out a whole bunch of individual quests, particularly in the second half of the game where the difficulty does spike. It doesn't spike too bad, but there is a noticeable spike where if you've prepared properly, you can then spike up and jump. But there's then again a collectathon and then kind of a really quick jump to the end of it where basically the game wants you to try and chase after some existing rangers who have gone off and had weird stuff happen to them, but you end up going to an area dealing with two factions, deciding which faction you like, working with them
sounds familiar.
Yeah, and then moving on to the next area, there's a couple of factions, working which faction you like, resolving the problem, and there's a little bit of a nibble of the main quest, then there's another area with two factions, then you travel to the second map in the game and you rinse and repeat that process three times or so.
Yeah, right, so it's a little bit formulaic there.
It's not formulaic. It's kind of just, it's a bit wandery. It's not gripping per se.
Yeah, and it's not exactly the type of game, because that's a top-down RPG, right?
Very much in your Fallout style of games. Yes,
yeah,
Fallout,
so it's not like you're just wandering around, having a look at the lovely scenery and, you know, enjoying just being in the world. You actually want to be pushed into the main quest line, or at least tempted to move it forward. But it sounds like it's getting in your way.
And that's the thing, is the main quest line is a very slow build towards the end. Very, very slow build.
So you finished it, though? You got to the end?
We got through it. We managed to, how do I put this? Let's say we dropped a nuclear device on the evil AI that was looking to take over the world, let's say. But
they deserved it, to be honest.
No, the AI is not very nice. He's totally rude.
When you say we, were you playing multiplayer somehow?
Oh, sorry, our party. My four rangers course. And...
You and the rangers, yeah.
My rangers and my NPCs, because this goes back to sort of your 80s, 90s style, early 90s style RPG, isn't it? You'll have your main party and then you'll have your companions, for want of a better word.
Gotcha.
Your other NPCs who will join you for a little bit and you can get rid of them or whatever, but you still have your core party there.
Are they all NPCs that you can add to your party, or can you have generic party members that you create?
So you'll make your four party members.
Yep.
And then you can invite up to three other random NPCs throughout the game. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, okay, cool. And you like obviously have to leave some behind when you find a cooler one or something like that.
Precisely, yes. Choice is involved.
Yeah, cool. I never got to playing any of them. So you played the first one as well?
Wasteland 1 from 1980-something. I did sadly play that in the late 90s, I believe. Yes.
Yeah, because that was what informed Fallout, right? That was a precursor?
That's right, yeah. That sort of set up the concept of Fallout, and Fallout perhaps has done it a bit more, has obviously done it more successfully, but the environment is still very similar. Yeah.
So, and, sorry. So, yeah, when I meant when from that question, what I was trying to gain was how does the story kind of continue in terms of the first one through to the second one? And is that why it's not satisfying, because the first one had a better kind of feel to it than the second one? Or the reboot?
Well, the story totally goes through from the first to the second. You're in fact dealing with the remnants of the problem you solved in the first wasteland, in the second wasteland.
Right.
I mean, the games are entirely different. The first wasteland is your typical text-based dungeon crawler from that period, and this one is obviously a top-down, nice 3D, properly rendered thing. And it's not the first one. I mean, you have to be a dungeon crawler player to play the first one, but for the second one, it's fine, but it's not. Comparatively speaking, say if I was going to ask you to play either Wasteland 2 or Pillars of Eternity, I'd probably get you to say go do Pillars of Eternity.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I played a fair bit of that and that was great. And I'm super keen to play the second one at some point when I can stop trying to earn money all the time. So and then 3 is being kickstarted now. It's on its way.
That's right. Yeah. So the desert ranges in Wasteland are based out of Arizona and California. So this is being set in the Colorado frozen wasteland.
Gotcha.
So the environment is a little bit different. They've gives them room to experiment with a few different things, but we'll see how it goes. Yep.
They're experimenting with the legalized weed everywhere, I imagine.
Well, with a few different things. That's right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it'd be left everywhere because, you know, it was in progress at the time the apocalypse happened.
Well, you just have to pick the stuff that's not irradiated, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, might have an extra kick to it. Cool, well, that sounds cool. So there's just a bit of a wait, though. It's like it's not until...
It's going to be a fair way away. It's not anytime soon, no.
Yeah, like, you know, first few months of 2020, because it's still 6 months away, say. But still, yeah, that sounds good. So not worth going to, even if you are a fan of those type of top-down RPGs? You reckon there's better ones out there? There seems to be quite a like a glut of top-down RPGs, like old-school isometric RPGs in the last 5 years or so.
I think if you're a fan of it, definitely go for it, because it does do a few things interestingly, and there are a lot of different quests and quest outcomes that you can get based on your party comp. But it is a little bit slow at times. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That sounds pretty good. So that was one off your list of things you ticked off?
That's right, one off, yes. And so I also completed, this morning, I completed The Seventh Guest as part of my Halloween-themed DOS game nostalgia trip.
Going old school there. That's ancient. I remember Seventh Guest from my childhood.
So, yeah, Seventh Guest was released in 1992 from Trilobite Software and Virgin. And it was one of the first of a series of games where everyone started to get CD-ROM drives and they thought that sort of embedded FMV would be the way to go in terms of games.
Phantasmagoria and the like, yeah.
Phantasmagoria being a very brutal and bloody form of that sort of thing. Seventh Guest goes along that sort of horror theme. But it's very light on in terms of violence, put it that way.
Yeah, it's more of a spooky explorer, haunted house on a hill kind of vibe.
Yeah, so you go into the creepy homeless man turned doll maker turned millionaire's mansion, and he's invited 6 guests in for a dinner party, and you get to see their ghostly apparitions in front of you. As the FMV, as you go through his mansion and solve the puzzles to work out what happened to the seventh guest.
So it's a murder mystery?
Not a murder mystery per se, but it's a puzzle game. It's
just kind of got lost somewhere in the basement.
The balance is really weird in that game because it is just literally puzzles. There's about 13 or so puzzles, one after another, and
are they super complex?
Well, some of them are really straightforward and some of them are blatantly obvious where you're happy with, like, you can look at it and you like, for example, there is a board with letters with lines drawn towards them, and you look at this and you say, okay, letters with lines, that obviously spells out something. Let's spell it out.
Mm-hmm.
Not hard to do. There are puzzles that are just entirely baffling, and that
are we talking mist level of puzzle, or just kind of like things that just don't make sense and they're just arbitrary, Secret of Monkey Island style. Put this with that. Oh, look, that worked.
I take offense at you calling Secret of Monkey Island things that don't make sense, putting things together. I'm upset about that. I'm going to put in an official protest to our mediating authority here.
Yeah.
But no, it's very much that things that don't make sense. The last puzzle, for example, there is a three-section skyscraper where there are four different windows on it. And the game doesn't tell you what to do, but when you click on windows on the bottom level, they light up. And as it turns out, when you click on a window, you then tell the window to move in a direction, and that will light up that direction that you move in. That mm-hmm. window type is then locked into moving in that direction. So basically by figuring out that by no means that's spelled out in the game, you eventually work out how to get to the top of the first section, then you can get to the top of the second and then the third. There is a hint guide in the game, kind of. There is a book in one of the rooms that kind of tells you that you've done something wrong or here's how the puzzle works. But for half the puzzles, you'll be baffled. The other half, you'll be loving them. It's really weird. There is four chess puzzles in the game. Chess-related puzzles, in that one of them where you have to put queens on a traditional chessboard, you put eight of them on there so that none of them can take another queen.
Okay, cool. We would say it requires some knowledge of chess in order to do that.
Right. There are ones where you have to move bishops from one side of a 5x4 grid to another, and another one where you have to move knights from one side of the board to the other. It just gets complicated easily, and it's some of them can be brute forced, and some of them you're just baffling. And there is one puzzle in the game that is literally run off of your computer's clock speed, that the AI works. The AI processes solutions to the game at your clock speed. And, of course, back in 92...
Pentium 1s, maybe? No, before that.
92, sir, 92.
Or 486s, maybe.
If you're lucky, sir. 386s at that point. Threes and twos, I think, mm-hmm. are the main thing there. And for those of you at home, that's less than 0.01% of our current processing power. And so some of them are a little bit that particular puzzle is basically impossible. So I had to use the skip function in the game to get through it.
486s came out in 89. So you would have a few years there.
In home usage, sir, in home usage. Not for your big fancy pants. Look at me, I'm using WordPerfect 2.0.
Weren't even running Windows at that point.
That's right. Windows 3.11 for workgroups.
I actually remember this. I actually remember Seventh Guest. I don't think I played it on PC though. Was it on? No. Was it on like Sega CD or something like that?
It may very well have been. I mean, as all of these games came out in this time, I mean, they would have been. These were heralded as the next best thing in gaming. Look at all this FMV. This is amazing.
It came out on the CDI, which was this weird console by Philips in 1990, which is 29 years ago. Just think about that for a second. makes me feel really old. It was the first kind of consumer console with a CD drive, but like it just got like no love at all. I don't think it lasted like very long. Like maybe it released a few titles in like its first year and that's about it. I don't think it lasted long at all. It didn't sell very well. And it had like a few Nintendo games on it, like Zelda.
Yes, I believe that's correct. Yep.
Yeah. And that was about it. Like there just wasn't very much on it, but I think Seventh Guest was one of the things on it. So no, I didn't play it on that. I must be remembering it from PC. Yeah. So you streamed that playthrough?
We got that through on stream, and you'll appreciate everyone in chat banging their heads against their keyboards and punching their monitors whilst I'm trying to flail
Of
about in
course.
chess puzzles.
Everyone remembers how to do it except you.
Well, to be honest, I was doing it at about between 5 and 8 in the morning, so my puzzle solving skills weren't necessarily top notch at the time. And I think, as I say, towards the end, I think I solved maybe 1 in 5 puzzles because I just had enough at that point.
So you're running it on what, the Steam version or on
On the
DOSBox?
GOG version, there is a 25th anniversary re-release of the game that came through, and that's on GOG.
So how did the CPU cycle thing play out in terms of that puzzle?
So that the puzzle I had trouble with, the microscope puzzle, basically think of something like Othello, where you're jumping your pieces to capture other pieces. There was
I don't
an
know Othello. What's Othello?
Othello is a board game with discs, kind of.
Okay.
Doesn't if you don't understand it, people at home are going, "Oh, I know what you mean now," but if you don't know, it's no point.
Fair
Think
enough.
of a complicated form of Chinese checkers, perhaps.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Not racist, but anyway.
That's allowed when, as long as it's not Hong Kong checkers, we're fine.
Please, Blizzard, where is Hong Kong Checkers coming on Battle.net? There was an AI written for this in one of the walkthroughs I went through, and I tried the AI to beat my computer playing against me, and it failed 4 times in a row.
Right, an AI in the game that's supposed to beat it, or a script, an external script that someone
Well, an
wrote.
external script that someone's written to officially make better moves than a human can.
This game is better at chess than
Then,
people's script
what this
writing
random
skills.
AI that was written in Java or
Yeah,
whatever, you know.
awesome. So just for the record, the 80486 chips had a max speed of 100 megahertz. So 16 to 100 megahertz, depending on if you're boosting or not. So essentially, that's like what did you say before? But it's about 37 to 45 times slower than the CPU you're probably running in your computer at the
I was a couple of
moment.
orders of magnitude off, but I think for amusement's sake, I'll take my figure. Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, we're only at, hang on, so it's megahertz, and then 1,000 megahertz is gigahertz, so probably running 3+ gigahertz CPUs, where I'd hope you are if you're listening to this podcast. Otherwise, get good. That's pretty damn slow.
But what if I'm listening on this phone on a Nokia 3310?
Well, that's probably running a decent chip in it compared to the 486s.
True, true. After the seventh guest, there was the 11th hour, which was a sequel. And then, so there's actually been remakes of the seventh guest and the 11th hour. And they wanted to do a sequel of that as well. And I actually had people tweeting at me saying, "Oh, there's a remake of 13th Doll as well, too, that's being fan made." So I'm not sure how they're going to go, to be honest, given that it's a kind of a niche game and it's not as well known as something like Phantasmagoria, which had a sequel as well.
Yeah, right, cool. That's cool. Well, yeah, nice one. Leading up to Halloween, you're going to be doing more Halloween related gaming streams.
We are almost at the end of Halloween now, so probably not. I think Twitch pretty much has me beat in terms of Halloween streams. Everyone's been streaming ridiculous stuff, so I'll leave it to them to do it properly.
Fair
Unless
enough.
people want me to put on my outfit for the KFC game again and just scare the crap out of them.
Yeah, that went down well. Well, I've been playing Destiny 2, funnily enough.
Destiny 2, not spooky at all, sir. How's that been going?
Well, they do have a bit of a Halloween event running from this week. So there's been a few things that they added this in this latest patch for this week. So we're only a couple of weeks into the Shadowkeep expansion and the Season of the Undying. So basically, the season access to the season is through buying the Shadowkeep expansion, if that makes sense. So, like, I think, to be honest with you, I think some of the seasonal content is accessible to everyone, like this upcoming thing. But say the Vex Offensive, which is a 6-man match made mode where you basically just run through a kind of 10-minute activity, just destroying the shit out of Vex, which are like these computerized robot race. And you get shitloads of loot out of it. That's something you can only access through the new expansion area, so the moon. Whereas something like what they're adding for the Halloween stuff, like you could potentially join that despite not having the expansion, I think. Don't hold me to it. But Season of the Undying is kind of tied in with this, like this shit, I'm forgetting all my words now for all of the different names of the things in there, but essentially you have this seasonal artifact, they've called it, and it's basically equipping global mods to this artifact, you know, this the Gate Lord's Eye, and it's just giving you boosts that are kind of specific to this season, and at the end of the season that'll disappear. So then there'll be a new season with a new artifact and, you know, specific mods for that kind of thing. So there, that's a way of pushing up your light level or your total overall level to have additional perks, and getting above the level cap is by having that. So if you're a non Shadowkeep expansion owner, then you don't have access to that, and so you're kind of capped a little bit under, like, you know, I think it's 10 or 20 light levels under that, but if you're playing it up to that higher level, you're probably buying the expansion. So yeah, that's how that kind of works. They've also added in lots of stuff into the store, which you can buy for real money, or Bright Dust, which is the in-game version of real money, and that's kind of all Halloween themed. I think the coolest part of that stuff was a mount that you can get, which is just a broomstick, a la Harry Potter.
Right, okay, yep.
So, yeah, you can run around. There's pumpkin heads. There's skeleton-themed armor and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, check that out. It looks pretty cool. I mean, if you're going to do a Halloween thing, why not just make it ludicrous?
Go full out, yes.
Yeah, so what we were doing, though, we finally got around to, and this has been something that we've been struggling to get happening for a good year now, is actually get into raid mode and kind of get a group of six of us together and jump into some of the end game content where you know, you get the best armor sets and raid specific weapons, but it's also just like a bit of a break from the usual. All right, we're loading in. Okay, what are we going to do? Basically just shoot everything and move on and get some loot at the end. Yay, let's do something else. Same thing, right? That kind of loot grind. You've got all of these puzzles to work out, and you've got your mechanics that are not found really in other parts of the game that really require a lot of coordination, as per any MMO-style raid, obviously. So it was kind of cool to jump in Destiny and actually do that. We kicked off with the easiest one, which is like one of the basically the first raid of Destiny, Leviathan.
Right.
Only because none of us have had raided before, except for one of us, Brad, aka Doofish, in our Discord, who kindly donated his time to Sherpering us through. We got through one boss and it's halfway through the second, and kind of ran out of time because we started a little bit late. And we then attempted again. We did get some gear out of it, though. It was pretty cool. And then attempted again to try that on Monday night, but we only got four of us on and couldn't find anyone else to join in with us. And then we, while talking about the fact we could matchmake, ended up just fucking around for too long and didn't end up kind of trying the guided game matchmaker, which essentially matches a clan with people looking to, you know, run to a run but don't have any friends with them. Yeah, exactly. To fill. So I'm not sure about that system in terms of what the status of it now is, but people found it that there was a super long queue times in the past, so I'm not sure what it's at, but we are going to try that. We just didn't get around to it again the other night, but brought in the Charlemagne bot into our Discord, which basically wants all of your data's, so it can tell you, you know, it can do some pretty cool stuff, like tell you what your loadouts are, or, you know, what vendors are selling at the moment. It can give you your total overall stats and things like that in different okay. modes of the game, and just generally playtime and all that kind of thing. It can organize groups, which is what we're kind of using it for. So I can kind of post an event and it pops it into a channel in our Discord, and people can you know, RSVP to the event and so on, and it sends reminders and that sort of thing. So that's kind of cool. I had another bot in there called Niles that we were using. It was linked to a Google Calendar, and it allowed us to kind of set a Google Calendar, but no one ever approached me with it, with an event. So it's just kind of useless. No one ever actually wanted to do anything. Hey, Jeff's on. Should I try and grab him?
I'll just why not? Let's, for the Destiny chat, let's definitely do that.
Hey, buddy. We're just kind of recording the podcast, and I'm talking about Destiny. Did you want to come in and talk about Destiny? Craig's doing the recording, so let's just give it a go.
System error.
And popping by, since we're talking about Destiny, is the freaking legend Pope, apparently now. Jeff, how you doing, man?
Yeah, really good, Steve. Thanks for having me. So Destiny's been pretty good. I've been absolutely enjoying being back on the shooting space monsters with my space gun.
Yeah. So I was just telling Dave about the raid attempts that we had. What did you think of the raid and how it's different from our regular sessions?
Well, the raid's a bit more puzzle solving than it is anything else. I kind of feel like there's a lack of shooting things, which is, you know, I primarily play Destiny for actually shooting monsters. Whereas the Leviathan raid that we've been attempting is more puzzle solving, you know, jump from here, jump to there, while not getting caught doing something else, or running from here to running from there while something ticks over. It's just as fun, and it requires a bit more coordination. So having six people and trying to coordinate it is interesting. At the moment for us, it's more like herding drunk sheep.
Yeah, shepherding. I found it a nice break from, you know, our regular sessions. Like we get on a number of nights in the week and do the shooty stuff. So it's kind of fun to do once a week, maybe, of you know, a bit of a organized mission.
Yeah, I think a regular Wednesday night sort of attempt to raid, I think, is going to be great for us.
Yeah, I mean, you get like plenty of loot opportunities there. Brad wants to do the new raid blind, so we just kind of all rock up in there and just see how we go and work it out, you know, like the first, so they have an event, basically, like whoever can get there first when it launches gets a prize.
That's very old school, though, trying to actually do the raid from the ground up. Because let me ask, I mean, because I've played a few raids in the Lord of the Rings Online day,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, obviously that's going to inherit a lot from your sort of your WoW raids, where basically you are trying to trigger bosses to do sort of things, or tanking bosses, or waiting till a particular pattern, then you put in your damage and then you wait again. Are we talking the same sort of thing but in a first person shooter, basically?
Yeah, there is definitely sort of like the end boss, like as you're going through, you do a hit an end boss and they are a bullet sponge, but it's more puzzle solving than it is anything else, Dave. Like you're going from section to section trying to work out, like have people stand in certain spots for lengths of periods of time and not die, because you do have to shoot some people on the way. But it seems to be more of a kind of puzzle than it is, like, you know, when I've done WoW raids, like, you know, in way back when, it was more, you know, being able to support your teammates with your abilities as you're going through, like, wave after wave after wave bad guy. And it doesn't seem like that in D2, Destiny 2.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about puzzle solving, is it more sort of you get this person to stand on this switch to activate the force field to open up the weak spot sort of thing? Is that what I'm? Because that's what I'm getting. Am I on the right track there?
Yeah, you're definitely on the right track. It's you've got basically one person standing there, holding something down for a period of time, and when it expires, then someone else has to run in, and that person has to run across to somewhere else, and it's kind of like this coordinated dance almost.
Yeah, but there's some stuff like where you need communication, like someone has a vantage point and they have to kind of guide the other players to a certain space, you know, to avoid alarming enemies or, you know, kind of aggroing mobs and stuff. So like there's a little bit of different types of mechanics like you'd expect in any sort of raid, but I suppose it's like a half thing. There's an MMOE part and there's also just a shoot shit as much as you can kind of thing. It's usually a combination of the two. We haven't got to the final boss. There's like in that Leviathan raid, there's like three segments and then a final boss. And the final boss fight, which I had watched on YouTube in preparation, just to kind of be across the mechanics in case Brad wasn't there, it's quite a long fight, you know, looks maybe a good 10-15 minutes of a fight with like multiple phases and multiple kind of mechanics in each phase. So yeah, quite a hard thing to get across.
I mean, obviously it's been quite big for Destiny 2 players with the changeover to Steam. So that's all gone very well, Jeff. I mean, there's been no issues from your point of view?
No, not at all. I haven't heard of any issues either. Like if you went through the process, it seemed to go very smoothly, you know. And as we said in the last podcast, I guess the only sort of annoying thing was that you had to actually re-download the game. But I guess it was worth it because all of the new features and functionality that they did actually put into the game was probably worth the 79 gigabyte download.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem. Like the Bungie support listings and this week at a Bungie post mentioned that some people did have some issues on PC moving, but I think they're pretty minor in terms of numbers. The Steam numbers are still really solid, so it's obviously not affecting too many people. It's apparently around 41% of the total population are on PC at the moment. So I actually thought the Xbox and particularly PlayStation was going to be higher, but it seems like most Destiny players are moving over to PC. Currently sitting around 171,000 peak today. So that's down from about 215, 220 in the first week or so. We are at the trough of the Steam time with only about 10.5 million compared to the peaks of about 14.5 million. So plenty of room to move there, but that puts it at fourth on the Steam game population count.
This is late night Australian time, you're saying? Yes.
Yeah, late night. It's like evening Australian time on a Thursday. So you know, not weekend numbers or anything like that, but it's still you still got PUBG at 600,000, Dota 2 at 540, Counter-Strike 591. Oh, these are peaks, by the way. Destiny 2 171 and Rainbow Six Siege at 116, and then it drops down to under 100,000 peaks for things like GTA 5, Team Fortress 2. Can you believe Team Fortress 2 is still like a top 10 played game on Steam? Yeah. It's crazy. So I think everything went pretty well. The bugs have been few and far between. They did disable a weapon, Telesto, this week because there's basically an exotic weapon that the special weapons in the game that you can earn, but you can only use one of. It allowed you to fire numerous grenade pulses, essentially, but not explode them till you release the trigger. But if you fired a bunch of them and then, yeah, so you had like six of them stacked up or whatever the max was of the clip, and then you threw a grenade at it, the grenade would count to buffing your super. So you could kind of go from having just depleted your super energy and then do that and then ramp your and then ramp your super all the way back up to full. So they disabled the gun because it was just allowing a bit of a glitch in the matrix there. That aside, yeah, been having a pretty damn good time with that. The nightmare hunt's just so the activity on the moon where you're kind of running dungeons that are, how long do you reckon they are? About 5 minutes?
Yeah, they're about sort of 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, so they're now in the four different difficulty levels. So there's kind of a base level that's pretty accessible, and then it ramps up to hero mode, and then there's two modes above that now to run that on that are for pretty high level end game players. Not the funnest thing to do, the nightmare hunts. I'm not really like totally taken by it as an end game kind of thing. Like, it's a little bit like, you know, it run through, it's pretty short, and it's like the enemies are just kind of get harder and harder to kill, and it's not that they're difficult to kill, it's just they take ages, bullet spongy style. So I don't know. Yeah, how do you feel about it?
I think they could be a bit better. I think there could be a bit more to them. I think they feel a bit thin. But saying that, I kind of enjoy it as well. So yeah, maybe they should, I reckon they should probably fatten it up a bit, put a few more enemies in there, make it a little bit longer.
So yeah, there's a Halloween event starting on the 29th. It's Festival of the Lost, which I believe they've run previous years. So it's kind of like the quarterly festival. That's when all that gear will go live, I was mentioning. The Haunted Forest as well. So like kind of similar to the Revelry. Was that around Easter maybe? Seems like it wasn't that long ago, but
no,
that is quite a long time ago. So yeah, a similar run thing like that for kind of specific gear to that event. Yeah, Destiny 2 going well. Cool. Thanks, Jeff, for joining us for Destiny 2 chats. And moving on, Call of Duty Modern Warfare releases tomorrow as we're recording this on the 25th of October. The crossplay enabled multi-platform title featuring no loot boxes, Dave. Are you happy about this fact?
In just a matter of hours, I'll be able to not play a title with no loot boxes. Wow, I'm totally stoked.
Also looking forward to not playing it in a matter of hours. It is going to be a big release, though. Like, you know, this is a big move. I think it's Activision Blizzard, I should say. Our saviors and overlords are, you know, kind of trying to, I suppose they're trying to claw a little bit back here with the anti-Blizzard sentiment that's being, everywhere on the internet since the recent debacle, which we'll probably get to later. But they're trying to claw back a little bit of goodwill. So I think this is probably a goodwill move more than anything else. Just kind of being like, look, we put out a game and there's no microtransactions.
Loot boxes. This is ActiBlizz, though. I mean, Blizzard per se, the games we're talking about have been Blizzard run and dusted. I mean, ActiBlizz is only the publishing arm of essentially Blizzard. So I'm not sure that you can attribute to good intentions what is just a business decision based on bad PR.
But, I mean, so you're saying this is an Activision decision, not an Activision Blizzard decision?
Possibly. I mean, it doesn't strike me that not including loot boxes is a way to garner back love for the decision around the Hearthstone stuff.
I definitely think it is. I definitely think they're making a move to kind of counter that. That along with, you're right. It could just be I don't know. I feel like it's reactionary. I feel like it's got to do with the fact that they were thinking about it, and then this just isn't a good time to cop more controversy over loot boxes in a such a big release title. And I think it's a great move. Like, I think they should absolutely do that because it sets a tone. Like, this is the kind of worst perpetrator, one of the worst perpetrators of loot box mechanics in gaming. And if they're coming out and saying our biggest first party title right now does not contain that and won't contain loot box mechanics, they're just avoiding, like, you know, we've had court cases in other parts of the world talking about the addictive mechanics behind loot boxes and attributing, you know, or comparing it to gambling in young people and how that affects them and being outlawed in certain countries. So they're kind of maybe just avoiding that whole potential debacle popping up again.
On the contrary, though, I mean, what better way to run over a PR disaster with a bigger PR disaster?
Do you think there's a PR disaster in the waiting here?
Oh, I use the word disaster perhaps
I see what you're saying.
Incorrectly, but
to take away from the recent.
I mean, it's been really nice to have gamers and people who play video games sort of united in their upsetness about this. It's like this is really weird. This hasn't happened for about 10 years, and that we've been able to share the same side in an argument. It's been quite amazing, to be honest.
What's that argument you're referring to? 10 years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago. It probably was loot boxes, to be honest. It probably was hats in Team Fortress 2 or something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah. There was also the kind of outrage at the split player base kind of mechanics of DLCs. There was the horse armor DLC in Skyrim that was huge.
That was the paid-for DLC in Skyrim, and that was that was still only about 6 years ago, I think, to be honest. That wasn't 10, but I digress.
That was 2013, 11, 13.
He maintained 6, yes.
Yeah, 6, so, yeah. And then the Battlefield with its premium and releasing the DLC packs, and so they've changed to a no additional paid DLC model with Battlefield 5. Not that that's helped that mess of a game, but talk about that in a minute. I don't know. I think it's a good move. I'm interested to see the reaction to the game. Like, they still have done one thing that is noteworthy, and that is restricting the Spec Ops mode to PS4 for a year.
We talked about this last time.
So we mentioned that. So that's still something that a lot of Xbox and PC gamers are pretty pissed about. But honestly, I think it's something that'll just be forgotten pretty quickly. I don't think that this title, like, I'm not interested in it, mainly because I feel like it's a hodgepodge of different modes. I'm not too interested in the core COD mode as it is, in the small, you know, the smaller maps and the 6v6 or whatever kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The ground war mode, when I played the beta, just felt like an attempt at Battlefield. Like, oh, look, we'll just put it on a large scale, but they didn't do any sort of balancing to compensate for that. So everything just felt a little bit like, hey, look, we made a Battlefield-y clone kind of thing, but it didn't really have the same feel and like kind of tactics game style gameplay that you can do in at least the older Battlefields 3 and 4, less so in the newer ones. So that seems a bit weird. And then the 2v2 mode, that's probably the most interesting looking one. So basically it's 2v2, each round, it's a random assignment of weapons. So each round that you play.
Ooh, random.
Yeah, each round that you play, and it goes pretty quick, obviously, because it's 2v2, so it's like a, you know, maybe under 2 minute kind of intense little fight in a small battleground. You know, you can imagine, I lost my first game of the rounds, I'm quitting kind of behavior. So
probably from the console kiddies and the gamers, yes, they'll definitely do that.
Better stomp that out pretty quick, or have some sort of mechanism to make sure that doesn't take over, because I can see that getting very frustrating and kind of killing that mode. So I don't know, just overall as a package, I'm not interested in it. I'm not the target demographic, I don't think, though, We'll see if anyone we know does play it and try and get them on. So that's releasing tomorrow.
Well, just wait before Christmas. I'm sure there'll be a $10 DLC Battle Royale mode for people to get into, where they cannot fix the mechanics for a 100-man map.
Yep. There's also like these huge day one patches as well, like 20 gig patches coming out.
Ooh,
so
rough.
You're talking about 90 gigs of download. So it's another big one. Not the biggest, though. We did see, I think we talked about last episode, the size of Red Dead, and I think Red Dead's coming in at something like 150 gigabytes.
Well, I don't think we mentioned it, but it was on the running list. So it's definitely rather large and somewhat imposing on someone like myself who was lucky to get 1 megabit a second.
Yeah, that's it's going to take quite a while. I think they might have a mechanic in there. I'm not sure if it's on all platforms where you can just choose to download the multiplayer assets or the campaign assets separately. That's a bit of a new thing I've noticed on Xbox, that you can do that sometimes. Gears of War 5 did it. So you're like, all right, I'm going to get my new game. I really want to play the campaign. So I'm going to like prioritize downloading that. And so as soon as that's ready, you can start playing the campaign through without worrying about having, you know, hundreds of gigabytes of other assets to come down, or at least do that at some other time.
Can I go to my local store and pick up the 15 DVD version of Red Dead Redemption 2 for PC?
Potentially, and get the game code out of it and then download it. Yeah.
And then download a 90 gig patch. Yep, sure. That's quite common.
I saw one of the retailers in the US is refusing to hold any titles that do that. I don't think it was, don't know if it was GameStop or if it was anyone big particularly, but getting the
seems rather silly
selling a digital product in a physical form. I mean, that's kind of the lay of the land though these days, isn't it? We're in this weird spot where the world's internet isn't what everyone thinks that it is, especially in Australia, most of America. They just don't have the speeds that you know, first world tech-based cities have. I know that quite a few of our Discord group are on NBN at the moment, and I'm sitting here in an inner city suburb with a latest date for my NBN, or the most recent updated date is June to September of next year.
Of next year now? Wow. Look, yep. Aren't you happy?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm going great. Yeah, it's really good. So, you know, being a web developer and a podcaster and a gamer, it's quite frustrating thinking about potentially moving, not just for that reason, but like it's very annoying. I know the cities were going to get it last anyway, but you look at the map and basically I'm surrounded completely within 2 streets distance in all directions. Of having NBN just not my street and the streets around me. Like, it's really frustrating. So, you know, maybe it's maybe the date's incorrect and they'll just knock it over at some point, but either way, it's still annoying.
Well, just remember, it's going to be faster, cheaper, and more affordable.
That's right. Thanks, Malcolm. Appreciate it. I mean, by the time it gets here, I'm probably going to have a 5G phone. I mean, most of the time, like, I've been doing this, like, a significant amount of the time now, when I'm on my laptop doing development work or I'm uploading or downloading large files, I'll just connect my laptop to my phone as a hotspot, because the 4G on my phone, particularly with uploads, is like 10 times faster than my ADSL2.
Probably at least, yeah.
Yeah, at least. So, you know, okay, I've mixed the podcast or I'm going to put that up on the server, for example. That's usually somewhere between 90 and 100 megabytes. You know, I'm looking at knocking my internet out for 15, 20 minutes while that uploads, and just sitting around twiddling my thumbs, given how much tech or entertainment or anything is tied to. I know that doesn't sound significant, but it is annoying not being able to do anything else.
You have to do non-internet related things. You have to look at local content or play local music or talk to local people.
Squats or something. Not too many local people in my apartment.
You'll have to go and hunt for local singles in your area. That'd be hot.
Well, I can't load the ads to find out where they are. So,
what a nightmare.
Yeah, so tethering to my phone is like kind of my way of getting around that for the moment, which is kind of sad state of affairs. But 5G... not far off. I'd say within a year we're rocking 5G and it's 12 times faster than the best NBN connection you can get. You'll have your 1.2 gigabit downloads versus your 100 megabits a second NBN at max anyway. So yeah, I don't know. Is it even worth having the NBN? It's a debate for another time.
Well, but I mean, of course, you know, with the NBN, you're not dying from brain cancer, right?
That's true. We're not killing
because of 5G invading the synapses in your brain and metastasizing the white space into something that, gosh, what's her name? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. People are nutters. 5G is fine.
I mean, it is concerning, you know, all the little kiddies dying of cancer.
lest we forget everyone who died from 4G.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We will remember them. So, yeah, COD and the internet and Red Dead Redemption 2. So we should kind of briefly talk about that, I suppose. We didn't really have too much to say about it last time. They released a 4K, a very high res trailer of the PC release. Watch the Digital Foundry Breakdown, big fan of that channel. They basically said that there's a few things in the graphics that you can notice that are specific to the PC version, like global illumination. But it's not like it's groundbreakingly changing the look of the game in like a largely significant way. Like, you've already got it running at 4K on Xbox One X, for example.
Right.
The frame rate, though, being 60 plus up to whatever you want on PC is a pretty big deal. But I think that's just kind of expected from PC players anyway these days.
Well, that's right. I mean, why can't we overclock our rigs to get 4K 60 FPS, honestly?
And then ultra-wide support and that sort of stuff. So there's all these like little cool, nice-to-have features, but like it's not like it's making the game, you know, drastically different. The draw distances were something they pointed out, you know, like having grass tufts on the ground half a kilometer away is nice, but like it's not like it changes that much, you know? Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it looks like if it runs well people can play it at whatever res they want on whatever gear they want, you know, like that's a successful launch. I just don't think it was necessary to delay it over a year, maybe a year and a half. I don't even know how long it's been. It's been quite a while since Red Dead 2 launched on the consoles. So, yeah, I mean, double dipping is what they get called for. Rockstar have been doing this for some time now, releasing the PC version of a game significantly later, with the hope that people will just cave and buy it on console and then also buy it on PC, which weirdly enough is probably something I will do. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I did start playing it on PC, on Xbox One X, and kind of got to that point where I was a little bit into it, and then just like, I think I'm just going to play this on my PC when it comes out because it's really cool, but like, I don't know, I'm just not feeling it right now, and maybe it's just a game that I want to look at, and it's very pretty. So I want to see it in its prettiest form. I don't know, are you thinking about it? What's your vibe?
Not immediately, no. I mean, the question is, I think you raised appropriately there, is if you can run on all sorts of rigs. And I mean, my horrible little AMD processor may very well struggle. I mean, I could run GTA 5 fine without any issues, but given the amount of detail that's in RDR 2, that sort of is a question over my head. And the whole cowboy thing, I mean, it'd be, if it was on sale, perhaps I might get it, but it's not something I'm going to immediately have to go out and buy.
Well, that, and you'll be buying it through Epic Games Store if you want to go out and buy it immediately anyway. That's releasing November 5th, I think, so a few weeks away at the moment, but another month from that for a Steam release, so options are plenty. When it comes to Red Dead Redemption 2. Moving on,
even got a bigger game releasing on Epic in a much shorter time frame, you're going to about to tell me.
I am. The Outer Worlds. So Obsidian's latest, basically Fallout in space adventurer form, The Outer Worlds, is arriving tomorrow I've already preloaded it on through the Xbox Games Pass on my Xbox. I'm not 100% sure if it's on the PC Games Pass or not. I might just check that now, actually.
So you've cheated and preloaded it through something that costs $1 a month?
Yeah,
that's exactly. Ridiculous. How on earth do you get away with that? Are you hacking the Xbox store? No, you're not, are you?
Technically, it's more than $1 a month. If you want just the PC Games Pass, there's a $1 introductory month and then a $4.95 a month while it's in beta, which I imagine will be a few months, if not six, before it kind of jumps up to $10.95 or something like that. Everyone knows I'm quite a big fan of it since I've had it. It's kind of opened up the doors to a really large selection of titles, and everything's been running pretty well across both platforms. I haven't had any significant issues with any of them. Not that they don't exist. I realize people have some issues, but there hasn't been the same kind of disaster of Windows Store and games for Windows Live of the past that we all remember. It doesn't look like they've added the Outer Worlds on the PC Games Pass at this stage. It's not on the recently added list. What is on there? Saints Row 4 Re-Elected's on there. Stellaris is on there. F1 2018. Dishonored 2. City Skylines. Killer Instinct. Dirt Rally 2. So the latest Dirt Rally's on there. There's a handful of indie titles, Lonely Mountains Downhill, Felix the Reaper, Bad North Jotun Edition, Enter the Gungan. And then along with like Gears 5 and Dead Cells, Blair Witch, that sort of stuff. So some pretty decent titles added in the last few weeks. You've got some things leaving, but like nothing of note. Nothing's left yet where I've been like, oh damn, I didn't get to like play that. Like I've only seen about 5-6 titles leaving the service across both platforms in the time that I've had it in the last 3 months or so. So yeah, Outer Worlds releasing tomorrow. So I'll have a bit of a report on that next week. It's apparently getting quite decent reviews. I know I was just looking before the pod and yeah, people are giving it in the 90s, 89s, that kind of thing. So,
well, as you would hope to expect that sort of score from the people who bought you Fallout New Vegas. Yeah,
exactly. So kind of, I suppose, not being able to have the Fallout license, but still having that tech. Ars Technica said it's the best Fallout-like game in years. So, I mean, following on from Fallout 76, which is more reports, still a bit of a mess. Did you try that?
No.
No, me neither. I just didn't see any reason to jump in. They're apparently adding in like NPCs to try and populate the world out a bit, even though that was supposed to be a feature of it. But
it's an active mess. It is. No, do not go near it.
Yeah, hot active mess, that one. It looks really pretty. It looks very kind of sci-fi-y, but still Fallout, the kind of Borderlands 3-y, not in the cel-shadedness, just in the color palette. I'm interested to see how that goes. I did watch a developer video, a gameplay video of it for about half an hour length. Week or two ago.
That was the first half hour of the game. You saw that video.
Yeah. And I was kind of like semi-watching it. I didn't want to ruin it completely, but I did want to see what the general gist was. And I was like, oh yeah, this sounds cool, but nothing in that I saw actually kind of grabbed me and made me go like, oh awesome, I can't wait. Like, it just, not like a Fallout trailer of the past would have. Mm-hmm. It's just more of like, oh, this is interesting, I wonder what they've done with this could be cool. So I'm gonna give it a go and see what I get out of it. Releasing tomorrow. Games Pass is probably the best place to give that a shot if you're semi-interested. Otherwise, you're on Epic Game Store or the Bethesda launcher, at least for a while, apparently. Is it coming to Steam?
The Steam page says it is coming to Steam in a year. However, as we Steam has signed that thing where they're only allowing games within 30 days. So perhaps this agreement was signed before that came into effect.
Possibly, yeah.
But regardless, it is Epic and Microsoft Store for the time being.
Yeah. It's apparently only a 25-hour main campaign length. So, yeah, maybe that's something I can actually finish. That's not a bad thing in my mind. Like, if I can actually get through and finish the game, that's something that barely happens these days.
Compared to 60-hour RPGs where you just get frustrated or bored halfway through.
Yeah.
Exactly, less than halfway through. Yeah.
Look, like if a game's good and the mechanics are satisfying, I'll just keep playing it. But I just fall off so many games these days because after that initial rush of being like, oh, wow, this is cool. Okay, learning those systems. Just very much like, I don't know, you're kind of just dragged away into other titles or just play sessions are becoming shorter, you know, limited to like a night here and there of, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours on a good night. You know, my go-to is Destiny because everyone else is on there playing as well. And, you know, there's so much content right there. I don't know, I just don't really... I'm not really getting pulled away like I used to into single player titles or even multiplayer titles that don't have a kind of
progression in that you can go back and hop in and out quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So Destiny kind of scratches that itch of being able to just jump in and really quickly just start up a mode and play it for 5 to 10 minutes, you know, or if I wanted to, or it could be a series of 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 minute activities that last for 3 or 4 hours. So it's easy to kind of just be on doing something. Oh, look, someone turned up. They just joined me and they're doing the same thing I'm doing now as well. Or, oh, so these other people are here too. Cool. Let's just all group up and do that thing. Oh, someone's got to go. Cool. Let's go back and do this other thing. Like, it's really easy to kind of just switch around modes. So if it was another game that kind of required, you know, a set amount of people or wasn't as fun if you didn't have as many people on, then I probably wouldn't be playing it as much, but it's definitely taken over from Battlefield in the void of the, you know, multiplayer game space, given the 5's recent debacles. Speaking of Battlefield 5, released their Pacific DLC trailer. So again, all the DLCs for Battlefield 5 are free updates. They were trying to win goodwill back there, I think,
with BF5, they kind of needed to.
Even though it's kind of annoying that that's all great, well and good, after it took BF4 and BF1 ages to kind of get their netcode sorted and get all the kind of issues worked out and content and balance and all that kind of stuff.
Basic game modes working properly.
Exactly. And then this is just a hot mess as well. So they've been obviously putting a fair bit into it. We've talked about the improvements of Battlefield 5 in the last, kind of couple of months, but it's still a bit shady. It's still lacking a lot of content. And so this Pacific trailer is kind of a bit of a, from what I've seen of it, it's a pretty sizable update. When I say sizable, it's a handful of new weapons, this, you know, M1 Garand, flamethrowers, that sort of stuff. But just the kind of actual World War II-ness, I feel like the Pacific theater kind of gives it a bit of World War II legitimacy, which is something that doesn't really feel like when you play the other modes of the game. It just feels like generic sometime in the past shooter. So Iwo Jima... Sorry, go ahead.
No, Were you just in a random town or random village with lots of jumpy, shooty guys with explosives and things just dying everywhere, whereas you go into an island invasion, you have the theme there, you have the Marines landing on the landing craft onto the beaches and running up into the Japanese machine gun fire. It's very thematically different from just a bland brown village.
Yeah, with fire everywhere. Yeah, exactly. So... I don't know. It looks cool. It looks much better than other Battlefield 5 trailers or content. We all know how the first trailer went down. So maybe this could be good. Apparently Iwo Jima is first. Wake Island, which was the very first Battlefield map from 1942. So they're kind of a horseshoe-shaped island.
They're redoing it, are they, perhaps?
They're adding this to... Yeah, that's the second of the maps. But that's not coming out until December. So... Yeah, it's basically one new map and a bunch of new weapon sets and associated, missions to unlock them or whatever. So we'll see with that one as well. I mean, again, like I picked up the Origin Access for a month or two there, and I got pretty bored of Battlefield pretty quickly. Did crash on me a handful of times. It did chug of times where other games just don't. So I don't know, I just, it's not feeling this one, and don't really feel like I'll be buying in. And this doesn't seem like a lot of reason to at this point. Might just have to skip it and wait for the next true Battlefield. Which,
getting back to its roots, a real Battlefield for the real gamers.
Yeah, I mean, what are they called, the next Battlefield, if this is Battlefield 5, but Battlefield 4 was before Battlefield 1.
Well, they can call it Battlefront 2 because they've got Star Wars Battlefront 2, right? And that's still consistent in the grand scheme of Star Wars Battlefront games, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's Battlefield Battlefront 2. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, call it whatever they like. Battlefront, the one where the 12-year-old tells you that your mum's fat. You know, I mean,
I was watching a history of Battlefield series, and I kind of realized that I miss 3 and 4 a lot, and actually want to really go back and play them.
The modern ones. Yeah.
Well, just I think that's the ones that really hooked me for a lot of my kind of gaming time in the last decade, and we just kind of like stop playing them because the new ones come out and other games come out and you move on and that sort of thing. But kind of watching a little bit of gameplay from 3 and 4 made me just go, those games looked really good and they played really well. And like everything was kind of really nicely balanced. The maps were interesting. There was all different tactics you could try on all different maps, and class system was okay. Like, you know, like you had different options in the different classes, and even though they've kept messing with that and screwing with it over time, which is fine. No, it doesn't need to stay the same all the time, but it's just that at that point in time, and particularly with 4, everything just seemed like done well. Like it's like this is working right now. It's just kind of like a little bit of a pinnacle moment before everything started to fall. That's after they did all of the updates to it to keep it kind of get it back into the public eyes, good books.
Mm-hmm.
Which did take some time, didn't it?
Just a little, yeah.
So anyway, we'll be keeping an eye on BF5 for the time being. Any other releases you're looking forward to in the next month?
It's jumping out. No, my releases are far, far in the future.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Star Citizen's a while off. Still,
perpetually far off.
Yeah, I think they're on like Alpha 3.7 or something now. Honestly, I have no idea. I know you're listening to this, the podcast listener, and going, come on guys, get your shit together, but I honestly have no idea when either the single player or multiplayer release dates are anymore. Apparently they pushed back the beta release date, so obviously it's still an alpha, and they've kind of just, I don't know, it's just kind of this moving target. So that's fine. One day it'll come along and it'll be great.
One day. Oh, glorious day. Yes.
All right. News section. PAX came to Australia again down in Melbourne. I did not go because I did not get to Melbourne that weekend, like most weekends. Did you?
No, I also failed to travel that weekend.
Yeah. Oh, well. Not much.
But also, if you've been to PAX and you want to talk about it, come let us know on the Eternal Beta Discord, or drop eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com an email.
Indeed, that'd be really nice. That'd make us feel really good.
Mm.
If you got this far through the podcast and then decided to contact us, That'd be amazing.
And not an abusive email as well, too. That'd be doubly
that's
impressive.
Fine. That's fine. Abuse is fine. Any sort of communication to the void would be great.
Would be good.
Yeah, something to talk about.
But on our Australian theme, so yeah, something we were going to talk about. So there is actually, I know you're a big fan of cricket games.
Oh, massive.
And I'm a big fan of Cricket 97, which is an amazing game with horrible graphics.
What did you play that on? Was that PlayStation era?
That was on PC. It was available on PC.
Okay.
But our friends at Red Ant Software, who are responsible for a series of horrible Australian sport games, have released a Cricket 19 game.
I think it's Big Ant, not Red Ant.
Oh, Big Ant, sorry. but their logo is red. It's entirely not my fault. Anyway. They've released Cricket 19, and then on top of that, they've released a slight mod and releasing it as a separate game to make it a Big Bash Boom game.
Yeah, right.
Where basically you have the large head mode from GoldenEye 64 on your players, and everyone is dressed in their fluoro confusing colors from the Big Bash.
Right. So Big Bash, it's the NBA Jam of cricket games.
I highly doubt it is. I highly doubt it's actually fun. But yeah,
this is licensed, right? This is KFC Big Bash League.
This is all properly licensed, including the most recent game. However, it's only licensed for the Ashes.
Oh, sorry.
So you have England and Australia in that, and of course, very cleverly, Big Ant Software have included a marketplace where you can go and download all the international teams for free.
Yeah, so I did that. I've got Ashes 17 or just Ashes, I think. Was it on the Xbox? And I think that was they gave it away free or something. Somehow it's on my Xbox.
And they had that
feature in there. Yeah, you can basically go and just be like, go to any like league, like any mode of the in this certain menu section, and just be like, get me like the top rated download of the players. And it just basically downloads the entire real life. Like, I mean, people have created them. It's like a player creator market. Mm. But essentially, they've given you a way just to be like, yep, get me all the teams in this league. Like, I want to play domestic Australian. Bang. All the domestic Australian teams are down with likenesses and names from the community.
Just a pity that there's not the five people clapping like at your normal Sheffield Shield match.
There's actually less than five people, but there is some sound effects in the career mode I started. And I joined the Brookvale team and started my very illustrious career, which lasted a good few hours. but the first, like, it basically makes you play 3-day tests from the start with like really low stats. And so you're just kind of like, I'm pretty fucked here, like from the beginning, especially like bowling. You're just getting hit all over the place. So, yeah. Got to work on my flippers there.
And, of course, it's not the Sheffield Shield anymore.
No.
Be quiet, TV Dave. You are over 20 years old. There
is now,
of course, the Marsh Cup.
Oh, the Marsh Cup. When did that change?
This year it is called the Marsh Cup. Yeah. And, honestly, it's due to every player whose name has a marsh in it being selected for the Australian side. Of course not. That's not the joke that everyone has already made. Yeah. Sorry. My apologies.
No reference to – no relation to Stan Marsh, of course.
No, not from South Park. No, it's definitely not a South Park reference.
Yeah,
no.
Good. Okay, good. That'd be a bit weird. Cool. And so you're thinking of picking this up, are you?
No, I had it out there as a public service announcement for people who love cricket games.
Gotcha. I don't know if is this like making them money? I mean, Big Ant's been around for quite a while, right?
I mean, as I said before, I mean, they've made a series of horrible Australian sport games. I'm sure they're responsible for at least two horrible rugby league games and at least one horrible AFL game.
Yeah, the rugby league games my brother is super into or has purchased at least over the years. They've been around since 2001. So I don't know. They're somehow getting by with these. Like, I mean, I know they're a small team. I'm not like dissing the fact that they're attempting to recreate sports games, which is like we're comparing them to overseas sport games, which have orders of magnitude more viewership and money to be made. Therefore, like more investment into the video games representing them. So
yeah. Only marginally. Are you saying that NBA is bigger than rugby league? Really?
Not, you know, it's not that I like that it is, but it just it seems like it's more popular. Well, not right now, but well, actually, yes, right now. Talk about NBA in a minute. depends on which week you're listening to this in. So yeah, look, I'm just kind of like looking at their history of titles. Well, what my question was is like, are they actually growing? Are they actually getting bigger and being able to invest more money and time into these releases? Because they just feel the same to me. Like the latest cricket, you know, I watched and read reviews about, and same with Rugby League Live 4, and they just feel like they could have come out 10 years before that, and we would have gone, oh yeah, that's pretty good. But like coming out today, or you know, within the last year or two, just doesn't really cut the mustard anymore.
It's hard to innovate on when you've got a classic formula going. What can I say?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Jetpack Joyride was pretty big. Fruit Ninja was obviously huge for them. So you know, it's not like they're exclusively sport games, but they have tried their hand at tennis and like you said, rugby league, AFL. So yeah, it's just, I mean, I've always wanted those games to be really great. And I thought as the years go by, you know, you'll see this like dramatic uptick in the quality or of the simulation or like, you know, these really cool features and things. But other than getting prettier, they don't really seem to be like developing like cooler AI or representations of the games themselves, like the real sport games. So I don't know. Keep going, guys. I'm a fan of your work, but I'm just not seeing the progress that I'm hoping for.
One day you will find the diamond in the rough.
Mm. I hope.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah. So last week I mentioned that my girlfriend's quite a fan of birds, and I went out and searched for games about birds after talking about Untitled Goose Game last episode. And discovered a game called Feather. Feather, I don't really know if you can call it a game, but it's kind of in the vein of Abzu, or any of those kind of like more experience-based sort of titles where you're flying around, kind of like Flower, I suppose, where like it's more about the immersion of it and the sensation of the movement than it is to being like actually having any sort of goals to achieve or anything to really do.
So not a walking simulator, but a flapping simulator.
No, from what I can see, you essentially fly around looking for songs to listen to, of which there is 9. There's a dynamic weather system, and otherwise you're just flying around listening to songs. And, you know, zenning out while listening to soothing ambient music. So, you know, quite an addition to the games with birds lineup. I'll be keeping an eye out for other bird-related games. If I do pick it up, I will let you know. It's at $14.50, though, so I might wait till Steam sale to see if I can pick it up cheaper.
And Steam sale's coming up soon, probably, with Christmas coming up.
Yeah. If anyone else knows of any bird-related games that they'd like to point my way, please do.
I mean, I know there are bird-related games there, but I think I get the feeling that nudie poker is not what you're looking for.
Not that type of bird, Dave.
That's got some ripe birds in it.
In it. All right.
In it.
So, Dave, what's this about Facebook poaching Twitch streamers?
So, long-time Eternal Beta podcast listeners may remember me talking about a particular streamer who went and got into the Guinness World Book of Records for completing all of the NES library that was released in North America.
Sorry,
called the Mexican Rudder. And he succeeded in that quite some time ago. And he has announced during the week that Facebook has poached him to play games exclusively on Facebook Games.
Right.
To which everyone in the chat immediately went, wait, what? Facebook Games?
What is a thing Facebook now? Games? Yeah, I mean, there's been the Apple Arcade thing released lately. Is that what they're trying to do?
They are trying to do, essentially, it's their equivalent of Mixer, I believe. I mean, I went and checked it out to actually understand what they were trying to do. And if you're a fan of PUBG Mobile or any of the gamer games that are out there, I think they'll have you covered. but it very much seems to be along the line of Mixer buying Ninja, except this is obviously a lot lower lower profile sort of thing. So I'm hanging out now to find out if Facebook are going to poach anyone else.
Are they paying him in Libra or what's the deal?
No, apparently they're paying him rather well because he will, at the moment he's working through sort of a retro gaming gauntlet where he is getting a lot of money coming in to keep him playing older games. Okay. So that will be moving to Facebook. So
you'll be moving to Facebook soon too, is what you're saying, for a lot of money?
No.
Never say no for the time being. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
They need to give me an offer and I will address each offer individually, but for the time being, I will be intermittently streaming on Twitch.
Absolutely.
It's an interesting move because, as I say, like it's the Facebook gaming as it is at the moment is mostly gamer games. It's not necessarily retro or console or anything.
What's your
like
definition of a gamer game?
Your CODs, your PUBGs, your Fortnites.
So mainstream.
Very mainstream, yes. That's where all the main channels were on the front page, yeah.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Just checking.
So it's not like I'm seeing, you know, Legend of Zelda or Sonic or Subnautica or, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
It's all very
so is he the only Twitch streamer that's been poached so far? Like that, you know.
I did a quick look around. I haven't seen any other announcements, but I mean, of course, obviously, every streamer will do their own little thing and may not announce it publicly.
Yeah.
And there's been nothing in the news about it yet, but I would be surprised if he would be the only one. This is going to be part of a bigger move by Facebook in order to try and attract talent to their platform.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that Facebook Games marketplace thing that, you know, everyone started farming and all that kind of shit back in the day, kind of fell by the wayside eventually, didn't it? Like, it's still there, but I'm not really a Facebook user anymore, so I don't really know the current state of play with that. But it's understandable that they'd want to move into the gaming market. It's just I'm actually quite surprised they hadn't capitalized on the streaming market sooner.
Well, the big hook is, of course, is that with Facebook's advertising revenue, they're able to offer a bigger cut to content providers.
Yeah.
So, of course, everyone who watches will get their own custom content advertiser based on mining their text and their photos and their comments for directed advertising. So it's going to possibly result in a more consistent income stream. The question is, of course, will people follow over a new platform?
Mm.
And particularly one that has such a mixed record, let's put it that way, as Facebook.
Indeed. It's all about making money these days, really, isn't it? There's a story here of probably the largest whale spend I've seen in a while in a game. And it happened to be in Transformers Earth Wars, where one person spent over $150,000, which is over $220,000 Australian at time of recording. A single person paid $200,000 in microtransactions. Can you believe that?
That's one kid who's got some really good leverage on their parents. Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming it's not a kid and that it's some sort of adult recapturing their youth. But that's insane. Like,
Notch needs a better hobby.
You can
yeah.
buy a small apartment for that in, not in Sydney, but like, you know, somewhere in Australia.
Possibly with NBN. Who knows?
Probably, yeah.
I read NBN. That article and that announcement about that dollar amount was based on a broader discussion about monetization of games. And it was entirely depressing because they were talking about basically targeted ad spending, targeted discounts, targeted targeted marketplaces for gamers based on their history in the game and their purchase history. And, it just became very depressing very quickly reading through that article.
Yeah, I watched a video of a guy talking about how to monetize game mechanics and how things can be exploited. And I was just sitting there in disgust and hit the dislike button. Enraged and closed it. But you know, like it, I mean, it obviously happens. Like these discussions are obviously part of most large corporations, like in terms of monetizing anything. So I suppose you can't really blame the marketing teams for kind of looking at that. And you know, we know that they hire psychologists and things to kind of get into the mindset of what will trigger people to not only play longer but also spend more money. So we're not numb to that concept.
No, you should be numb, and you can totally blame them for being corporate shills chasing dollars. You can totally do that.
Well,
I won't say a bad word against you if you do.
I wouldn't have expected you to be the one defending late stage capitalism on the
funny
podcast.
About that. Yeah, I don't know where you get that from.
That's odd. So yeah, anything can happen on the Eternal Beta podcast. That's why we do it. So moving
also,
on.
Also go epic. Yeah.
Go epic. So speaking of Blizzard, what's the current state? So we had a bit of a argy-bargy last episode on what was recent at the time. It only really just happened, wasn't it? It was like the week after.
It was within a very short time frame. We've had sort of 2 weeks now off for it to bubble and fume for a little bit.
Yeah,
where very little has happened.
Well, they changed their decision. That was one thing that happened with Blizzchung. So they halved the ban and gave him his winnings, in a way of kind of trying to announce that they weren't being an arm of China, in order to keep the revenue stream there, which you know, hasn't really pleased a lot of the kind of Western world. We're still seeing posts. There was a post today I saw of a guy burning all of his Blizzard games in a fire because he was a because he was a Marine, and he was like, "This is you know, I've fought for my country, and you're you know, shutting down of free speech, towards freedom is abhorrent, and fuck you." So
can I correct your pronunciation? That's frim, freedom, and from America.
Freedom,
freedom,
freedom, America,
freedom.
Yeah, well, America. That's what it sounds like to us in Australia. Yeah. What do we sound like to them? Do you reckon?
You know, you got a man, right? You're looking all right. You know, a bit of freedom here and there. As long as you're locked up in an island prison camp, you're doing all right.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Something like that?
Probably, yeah, it's pretty spot on. Not bad, not bad. So, yeah, you know, it's an ongoing saga. They have copped it. Like, they've copped it from both sides. As I predicted, the backlash came, and it came pretty hard. So there was the protests of the Blizzard employees themselves. There was other teams, including one competitive team who were trying to get themselves banned by protesting. That actually took them a week to get their ban, which they were finally happy about. They were going to, they were supposed to have all these tournament participation events that they were going to throw anyway. They were kind of like deliberately protesting that. So that happened. This is all wrapped up in like kind of the larger conversation around the NBA and South Park and
just the NBA the being slightly bigger than Blizzard, sure.
Well, yeah, yep. Well, when it comes to media gaffes, or PR gaffes, but, you know, the larger point being the protests in Hong Kong, which probably at this length of the podcast we won't go into. So that's still raging on, but yeah, Blizzard definitely not in favor at the moment. That's probably all we'll need to say about that. The NBA though,
It's gonna simmer for a little while. I mean, we'll wait and see. I mean, wait till the next release comes out and see how that goes. That's gonna be their big challenge.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean,
the next BlizzCon.
The other thing they did do was like stop people from like shutting down, deleting their accounts. So people tried to, in protest, I uninstalled Battle.net, but I didn't go as far as deleting my Blizzard account, but people were trying to do that and discovered that of the like four different methods that you can used to shut down your account, they'd disabled all of them. So there was no actual way except getting on the phone or emailing and arguing with them of deleting your Blizzard account conveniently. With, you know, it had all been working fine up until that week. So they're definitely trying to stop the bleeding.
Well, that's the adult way of doing it, right? I mean, that's very much the adult way.
Yeah, is basically don't admit anything and just stay silent until it blows over.
Yeah,
yeah,
perfectly fine. That works out fine for everyone involved.
Yeah, I can just...
Hi to my ex-girlfriends out there, yes.
Yeah. So the NBA kicked off yesterday, actually, excellent as a basketball fan to have actual basketball being played as opposed to being argued about whether it's going to be played or not due to political arguments. But that's great. But the main reason I'm bringing it up is that we've got a fantasy basketball league going. So me and Jeff, who was on briefly earlier, and a couple of other Discord mates, Brad and his partner, Kel, and a few guys from my Brisbane mates, they're all in there, and we've kicked off fantasy basketball. So good old stats-based scoring system based on which, you know, your real-life player stats if you haven't played fantasy sports before. Have you ever played, Dave, being a stats person?
I've done a few fantasy things before, not NBA. I must admit, my knowledge of NBA is not tops.
Yeah, I mean,
so I would be putting together a team of people with funny names, which is not necessarily the hardest thing to do in the NBA.
Yeah, true. It's not actually as like kind of needing to know about the NBA as you think. Like we did an auto draft, so essentially it just random rolls the order and then does it in snake draft order. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, then 10, 9, 8, 7, so on. And mm-hmm. each round it reverses. So you can kind of preset your desired ranking of players if you want, or just go off the like Yahoo or ESPN rankings that are already there, right? Like, yeah, it's like, yes. It's like, here's the order we think that players are worth. You can adjust those if you want before the draft. You can do a live draft, and that's usually how I do it. But with these guys, we were just like, it's kind of casual league. So we're just like, let it auto draft. We'll all just get a bunch of players. And then we can be like, oh, I don't want this guy. Oh, I want that guy. And trade between each other if we want and whatever.
Trade appropriately.
But essentially, yes. It's just, and we're doing weekly locks as well. So there's not much upkeep to do, basically. You just have to, you know, make sure you maybe move anyone who's injured for a few weeks, make sure you move them into an injured spot and pick someone else up so you don't lose too many kind of points per week. And then it's you versus someone else in the league, total points based on the real stats of the players. So you can kind of, you know, set your lineup based on just filtering the tables of the results and just being like, all right, what's a good player that can fit in this position? Because that's, you know, what I need for my team. You know, who's the top available ones? Or maybe I'll get rid of one good player and ask someone to trade me two decent players for the one player and drop someone shit from my team, you know? So you can kind of play it that way. Bit of strategy in there in terms of how many games they're playing per week in a certain week. So you might want to look ahead and be like, oh, this player's playing only 3 games next week and he's pretty average. I might pick someone up off the waiver wire who's playing 5 games, because those 5 games, their stats, even though they're less good, might add up to more than just this guy playing potentially 3 games. So yeah, there is a little bit of like, the more inside knowledge you have and intimate knowledge of, oh, well, this guy's definitely going to get like, you know, 30 minutes a game, and therefore his stats are going to be, you know, pretty decent. Versus, oh, I know this coach is like resting this guy, even though he's their best player, he might be resting them, you know, during the early part of the season. So they're actually not going to get as many minutes as you think they are being the star, because they're trying to save them for later on in the season, that kind of thing. So anyway, that's kind of another form of gaming that I'll be doing over the next 6 months. Looking forward to it and enjoying
it. If you're interested in that sort of thing, hop into the Discord.
Yeah, hop into the Discord. Hit us at Eternal Beta Pod on Twitter, eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, TV Dave, for this week's episode.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Steve. It's been a pleasure as always.
We didn't think we had much content to talk about, but we're at over an hour and a half at this point.
We're doing well, sir.
Yeah. So, yeah, get in touch with us. We'll catch you either next week or the week after. I don't know. It's kind of like we kind of seem to be falling back to a fortnightly schedule at the moment. But we'll see if we can get some in-person recordings happening. That was a goal that we kind of missed due to lives getting busy. But if that can happen coming towards the end of the year, we're probably going to do maybe a half dozen more episodes for the end of the year and then take a little break again for a little while. So, yeah, get in touch with us if you can join us on the podcast. We'd love to have you on, and we'll speak to you soon.
Right, bye.